This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Jake Bean holds in. Right wing for Braden Cajal. Threw it into the crease. They score! Jammed home in the blue paint by Jonathan Huberdeau. And the Flames have the lead for the first time tonight. It's 5-4 Calgary. Backlund to center with a chance for the empty net. It was blocked by Hughes, back defending. And he controls the puck for the Canucks. Hughes up the left wing. Here's Miller into the Calgary zone. Top of the circle. He scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Zary to the Vancouver line. Pospisil driving the net. Zary, high slot, makes a move to the back end of the forehand. He scores! A beautiful goal by Connor Zary. And the Flames get the win in overtime. They trailed 4-1 against the Canucks after the first. They battled back to take a 5-4 third period lead. JT Miller tied it late, but it's Connor Zary who plays the hero. And Calgary gets 2 points on the road in Vancouver on the opening night of the season.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose 6-5 in overtime against the Calgary Flames. They blew a three-goal lead that they had in the first period, end up losing in overtime 6-5, and had to come back. JT Miller tying it 5-5 late in the third period to even salvage a point in this one. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. And as always, you can grab a phone line 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. Also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. It's Satyar Shah, Bick Nizar. We'll bring in Randeep Janda in just a moment into the conversation. And a game that started off so promising, so much fun. I mean, the Canucks were playing with pace, created scoring chances, they're scoring at will, the building was alive, Calgary was on his heels, looked like they had no business being in the game, took a 4-1 lead after the first period, and after that, it's like the Canucks quit playing with that level of intensity, and they didn't get enough saves either.
Yeah, fair play to Calgary for working the way back into this one slowly, but, you know, the story is going to be this team that last year was the best in the league at scoring first, was the best in the league when leading after one and leading after two, how good they were at closing out games. This wasn't a tight one to begin. You had a 4-1 lead after the first period, and a lot goes wrong in the final 40 minutes. We'll touch on goaltending certainly throughout the course of the day, but as you mentioned, Sat and Randeep, the intensity levels certainly declined there from the Canucks.
Yeah, that really started at the beginning of the second period, right? You saw, you know, the fall off there, and guys, one team was motivated. Sure, the Kevin Rooney injury, it's tough to see that. But once JT Miller fought Anthony Mantha, the mood in that game changed a little bit, right? I thought Calgary, to their credit, to your point, they were skating a lot harder. They were being aggressive on the forecheck. Yeah. But as much as I want to talk about what Calgary did, it's what Vancouver didn't do. The skating wasn't there. The pace of the game, the forecheck wasn't hitting home, right? There was a lot of eating pressure. That's two things. That's one team being aggressive on the forecheck, but the Canucks puck management was a problem that second half of that game. And unfortunately, they end up, really, this was a game that they should have had 2 points.
Well, they really should have. There's no reason for you to lose the lead the way the Canucks did lose the lead. And then also to not only allow Calgary to tie the game, but also take the lead, you know, completely melting down there in the third period. And I thought it was kind of funny because I thought the Canucks started the third period far better than anything they did in the second. But then Calgary scored right away afterwards. They had two great chances. Sprong had one, beating the defense, and then DeBrusk had another chance set up by Pettersson, but they didn't finish those chances. Mm-hmm. And then like a minute later, Calgary scores, and after that, it was just Calgary one after another getting goals by Artur Shilovs. And the other thing too, defensive zone coverage. We talked about this a little bit during the preseason, Randeep, where in their own zone, it looked like guys weren't quite sure what their assignments were. Do you chalk that up to early in the season? It looked like Ratu at times, even looked like Sprong. They weren't quite sure what to do and where to be, and it opened up a lot of space for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, we saw that in the third period, but even in the first period, I know there was a couple of, it was a little back and forth, and there was probably a little too more river hockey for Rick Tocchet's liking, but Vancouver dominated in that first period. In the third period, you started to see a little bit more chaos and guys getting on the wrong side of players, right? There was a couple of moments in front of the net in the blue paint where not only on the defensemen, but the forwards as well. There's just a lot of room for some of these Calgary Flames. And Pahal's way down on the right-hand side, and that's not his profile. But you're giving a lot of room to these players to work down with the puck. Part of that is defensive zone coverage, but they were playing tired in a lot of these goals. They were a minute into the shift, and if you're not able to get the puck cleanly and deep into the opposition zone, you're not able to change.
Yeah,
that you're more likely to break down, right? We can talk about stamina. Are they up to speed yet based on you know, a – the defensive zone coverage, but also this, you know, are they, is their endurance there yet? But to me, I thought it was also like, you just got to get simple plays, get the puck deep, make a change. They were second period, it's the long change. Third period, they were having a tough time doing that too, Bick.
Thing is, though, Randy, you can't change when you lose three defensive zone faceoffs and they end up in goals. Now, one of them is off the power play, Uyghur, quickly off that one. But they, you know, we've chatted about this in the preseason. Defensive zone faceoffs, what are your assignments? Yep. And there were moments today, like Sprong looks a little bit lost, and you can see Pettersson pointing, and Sprong overcommits to a spot, and Anderson sneaks into a spot, and DeBrusk doesn't track him. It happened throughout the course of the evening, paired with shots from distance on the goalie. It you know, one issue pairing with another issue, paired with a third issue, leads to this comeback for Calgary.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, in terms of some of their critical guys on the blue line, two players getting a lot of the attention have been two new additions, Desharnais and Forsberg as a D pair. And, yeah, they had a harder – like, it's funny because Bick and I were speaking after the first intermission, after the first period, about how Desharnais and Forsberg, for the most part, were moving well. They were defending well.
Keeping it simple, yeah.
Yeah, keeping it simple. Everything was all right. And then as the game went on, longer and longer shifts get caught out a bit more. And how they would transition, move out of their own zone was going to be part of the issue with this D pair. Neither guy's adept puck mover, but both guys are big and sturdy in their own end. They just didn't get to pucks quick enough. They weren't able to separate man from body consistently enough. Do you chalk that up to, hey, first game for these guys trying to figure it out? Or, as a lot of people are pointing out, questions about these guys and whether they can be a sustainable third pair?
Well, okay, it is one game, right? We have to be really mindful of that. These are two players that are... sure, they've got a resume, they've got a profile, but I think a couple of things, especially with Desharnais, they're trying to kind of change the way he plays to a certain extent. That's not going to happen overnight. That's not going to happen over a training camp or a preseason. So I think it's a work in progress. We talked about this on the pregame as well, where with Desharnais, it's going to take some time. He's got, you know, one-on-one coaching with Sergei Gonchar. A couple of areas, though, you're right. For guys that are known as cycle breakers, they didn't do enough of that late in this game. The other thing is, even in the offensive zone, guys, a couple of times, some of those passes were not crisp, tape to tape. They were off. And what happens when you're not the fleetest of foot? You lose that puck, it's going back the other way. So you better make sure, if you're going D to D at the blue line, if that pass is off, speedy wingers are going to say, all right, we know who's back there. We're going to go straight. And that happened a couple of times. That's going to happen against Philadelphia as well if you don't connect on those passes. So I thought, you know, obviously, it's a long road here. These guys are going to get more used to, you know, playing in Vancouver and making these changes, playing a simpler game. But it is one game.
I felt like the issues cropped up more into what you mentioned in the offensive zone. Mm-hmm. Where, and look, we're not expecting worlds of creativity from these two guys.
Speak for yourself.
But yeah, it was more noticeable in the offensive zone. Because in the defensive zone, you know, I thought Calgary did a fantastic job of bringing three, four guys high above the circles. And I'm not expecting Desharnais and Forsberg to chase players out above the circle.
Yep.
So it's on the three forwards to sort that out of, hey, when one guy crashes, who's going to do that? And even on the Huberto goal, I think it's possible so that drives through the middle, and it's Forsberg that flashes up, and Sherwood doesn't take the guy on the wing, and it creates all these issues. So I don't necessarily need the D-men above the circles to challenge players up top. But look, they had their issues, of course, but to me, like, the bigger issues were in the offensive zone. Defensively, like, I think when upon review, we're going to look at the forwards tonight and say, like, okay, what's going on in the D-zone here?
Yeah, and this who picks up whom, right? Yep. And I think that's something that we're going to have to wait and hear from the head coach, and if he's asked specifically about some of those plays and who was at fault.
Well, his line changes and the way he threw in the blender kind of showed at certain points where, okay, I have confidence in this guy right now and maybe not so much, but, like, you know, we saw Sherwood bounce around. He took a penalty. He sat for a little bit, but he was back out.
Well, he was with Pettersson late as they were trying to tie the game up. Two guys who barely played late in the third were Atu Ratu and Daniel Sprong.
Yeah.
And I know Sprong, you know, did he even get a shift in overtime? I'm not sure he even
got
a chance to go out there.
No, he had an 11-minute break in that game as well, from 18-18 to 7:03.
Same issue with them, right? Like, in terms of the coach, there are certain aspects of his game that he wants him to be better at, and obviously they didn't see enough of it to trust him late in the game. They're trying to get the tying goal in. But let's talk about Shilovs here as well before we let you go, Randy. We saw throughout, at certain points of the preseason, him having some trouble with some long-distance shots. We saw that, obviously, at points in the playoffs, and that's kind of been the book on him. Obviously, most goalies with shots that have screens, they're going to have a harder time. Like, that's just fact of life. However, Shilovs has a harder time than most when it comes to those long-distance shots. And I can understand with screens, but they weren't even all screens. And the thing that got me tonight, and maybe this is just him being too amped, and it's one game. Again, I'm not trying to, you know, come down too hard on the kid, right? Because obviously a lot of potential, super talented young goalie.
One of 82, yeah.
And it happens. Even the best goalies have bad games. But he seemed like he wasn't sure what was going on. There's so many times he was leaning one way, and the puck went the other way. That, to me, looks like a guy who's not very sure of what's going on some of those long-distance shots, and clearly something he's going to have to clean up quickly.
For sure. And this is, you know, having Kevin Lankinen back there, of course, gives an option, and whether Rick Tocchet goes with the veteran on Friday. But, you know, we've been talking about those long-distance shots going back to last year, right? They popped up in the Nashville series. I believe it was Carrier that scored that goal through traffic, and benefit of the doubt, there's traffic a little bit there. Edmonton series, Evan Bouchard, he had the Oilers had a book on Archer Shelovs, and the rest of the NHL does now too. They know, hey, this is an area, until he fixes it, this is an area you're going to target. And a couple of those plays, Sat, you're 100% right. There wasn't much traffic on, right? And you talk about leaning left and right and not really know. That's a trust thing where when sometimes, you know, you talk to defensemen, you talk to goalies and say, hey, I trust my defenseman to take this side or my forwards. And if you're not sure who's got what, and if it's a bit of a mess in your own defensive zone as well, you're probably going to be guessing a little bit more. But that goes the other way, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you trust your goaltender to take half of the net, too. So I think he's just got to be, you know, just he's got to be sharper. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to come down too hard on it, but there is a sample size now that's building up here, which is, all right, you got to sort this out a little bit because the book's out, right? Like, the NHL has done their scouting on Archer Shelovs and says 6'4 goalie, but he can be beaten from distance, tracking the puck. He has trouble with it.
It's hard to pin the last goal on him because Zari absolutely walks Filip Hronek and gets in.
Yeah, not that one, no.
But even on that play, he bites hard to his left, right? Like, even before a move gets made, he looked like he was just too eager tonight. And maybe it is being too amped up, and maybe it is him trying to prove he's the guy because Lankinen is here too. But one thing we know is Lankinen, an experienced goaltender, had good numbers the last couple of years. Even before the start, I think the plan was for Lankinen to start Friday. That would be my guess, and I'm sure we'll hear that from the head coach. But it's going to come down to who plays best.
For like, it's a 1A, 1B, guys.
It's going to be who's going to be the better goaltender. And as much as Shelovs has been maybe seen as the 1A, it's going to come down to performance, even early in the season.
If it was just based on merit, just off the preseason, like my pick would have been Lankinen to start game one, and we chat about that after the first game. Now, he was better in the Edmonton preseason game. But the goal that really stands out to me is the Pospisil one, because there's the behind-the-net Campbell camera here, where as that pass goes across to Pospisil, Shelov tracks all the way to the guy that's...
He was anticipating the pass before the pass was even, he was somewhat telegraphed.
He was anticipating Rasmus Anderson getting it. So you're not even squared up or looking at Pospisil. So what do you think is going to happen when that shot comes through? So he's nowhere near ready. And it's one thing to just get beat and say, oh, look, like he has a weakness in his game. You're not squared up. You're not looking at the shooter. So what do you think is going to happen? It's going to go in.
Well, here's the thing, though. Archer's historically, and with the small sample size we have, is a pretty calm goalie, right?
Yes.
Like in big moments, like last year, there's nothing bigger than the Stanley Cup playoffs. He was a guy that was pretty solid, and he was a guy that stood up for every moment. Here, I think the over-aggressiveness, it's maybe that one moment where you're just saying, all right, this guy's really up for this game, or he's a little jittery or whatever you want to call it, but he was biting hard. And I think, to me, sure, you can chalk that one up to not the greatest of games, but the sample size that going high on a 6-foot goalie and not tracking, like that's the stuff I really am kind of focused on now, because that sample size is starting to develop now.
The other part, too, and a lot of people are texting in about it, 650. Sorry if I don't put your name to it, because there's a lot of people texting in about it. It felt obvious that he was struggling.
Yeah.
At 4-3, was there an opportunity to pull him? And I get it.
Fair question. Fair question.
It certainly should be a question that's lobbied at Rick Tocchet in the postgame.
I know. And I know people are amped up because it's the first game of the season. People are excited to be back. But also, there was a plan in place, and maybe the coach felt like, hey, you know, let him have the 60 minutes. It's a long season. Let him work through this, and maybe as time goes on. But you can't have many more games like this.
No,
I think that's kind of the reality. But it's the first game of the season, and things can change in a real big hurry, too.
I will say this, though. If you're the coach, potentially, you're looking at it and saying, hey, we got a game on Friday, and the guys in front of the goalie are not playing well either at this point. So, hey, you up your game, and the goalie's going to stay in there because we want to spread out the love here over the next couple of days. You know, if the team was playing well and he was letting goals in, then I can understand and say, all right, you're not giving your team a chance to win. But, guys, who was skating more than that the second half of this game? Even the two-thirds of this game.
Yeah.
It was Calgary, right? It was, they were able to hit the Canucks, and Vancouver looked fantastic. They were aggressive. They were playing with pace in that first period. But to me, I only make that move if the team is not responding or is responding and he's not. I don't think the team was responding either.
Well, I think that's the other point. As much as we know, for those that are just maybe listening and hearing us talk about Shelobs, there were a lot of people participating, players participating in this loss. It was an overall team effort loss, especially with the lack of chance generation, shot generation after the first period. The urgency wasn't there. The defensive breakdowns were there.
Yep.
So a lot of things that obviously led to them blowing a 4-1 lead and ultimately losing 6-5 in overtime. But that's just a part on Shelobs. Now, before we let you go, Randeep, any other thoughts you had about the game here?
I thought just the puck management. To me, 15 giveaways on the night, and a lot of them, really, we can credit Calgary's forecheck, but, you know, there was a pizza up the middle that Filip Hronek got lucky that nobody from Calgary jumped up on. In the early part of the third period, it's little things like that that will bother Rick Tocchet. Those are the things you want to clean up. Stick to your staples, simplify the game. And if a team beats you fair and square, that's fine. But don't do it yourself. And, guys, when you're up 3 goals twice in this game, that's something that's going to bother the head coach.
And even moments, too, of loose pucks. They did a fantastic job in the first period of getting to loose pucks early, just poking it away, getting it to a teammate, whatever it was.
Second efforts,
In the final 40, you know, Sat, you mentioned to me, even after Sprong's prolonged absence there, there was an opportunity on a loose puck, and he just kind of skates by it.
Yeah.
So it was tough spots through the course of the evening.
No, it certainly was. We'll continue breaking this stuff down. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. But Randeep, great stuff, man. And, hey, we'll chat on Friday. The Canucks host the Philadelphia Flyers, and a lot of fun that night because Alex Edler is going to retire as a Canuck, signing a one-day contract on Friday.
That is awesome. And, you know, one of the things that we saw with Alex Edler at the end of his career was all class, maybe not the fleetest of foot at the end of his playing days. But, guys, I remember, and you guys do too, in his prime, open ice body checks.
Yeah.
He was basically, you know, just an absolutely steamrolling. So I'm looking forward to that. Never one to welcome media attention. I remember interviewing him, and it was the shortest interview that I've probably done with the intermission interview. So I'm looking forward to that because he doesn't welcome the attention. He's just a guy that loves the game, and it'll be cool to see him have that moment.
Yeah, it certainly will be. Randy, thanks so much, man. Calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor. 6-5 overtime loss for your Canucks in the season opener here at Rogers Arena. It's Satyar Shah with Bik Nazar. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. This one here says, I think the Canucks can improve with some structure. We need some more game structure. It was a loose game. Game ones are like an entire season in a game. Canucks can find their way if they just tighten some things up. All right. You know what? Let's take one phone call because we have people here waiting patiently. Then we got to hit the break and we'll come back. We'll hear from the head coach and a lot more post-game reaction. A player for the Canucks who had a strong game, then to score 4 goals to open the season like he did last year, but he had 2 goals helping the Canucks at least get a point tonight, and that was Brock Besser. And let's go to Nate in Surrey, who's on the line and wants to talk about Brock. Thanks for calling in, Nate. What do you have for us tonight?
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Satyar and Dick Ram, the prodigal son's return. How was your summer, boys? How you doing?
Fantastic, man. Happy to be back.
Amazing, amazing. Did Dick finally hit the gym?
No.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Well, you got a full another 82. Oh, I guess
there
81 now
yeah.
after this one. Like, but my goodness, not quite the game we had last year with the 8-1 blowout. But, of course, my boy Broccoli Besser starts off the hunt for 50 strong with 2 goals. 48 to go, baby. Let's go. And as always, JT starts the first game with a bit of a masterclass, boys. He's fighting. He's popping apples, boys. And you know what? He turns the puck over there. Towards the end of the game, makes an absolute dazzling save. Of course, he redeems himself and snaps it.
Sorry, Nate, we've got to cut you
absolutely
off there. Your phone
yeah,
line
no.
is breaking up there. Sorry, man. But if you want to call in, you call in. We'll get you on a bit later on in the show. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll hear from the Canucks head coach. That's next as the Canucks Central postgame show continues, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. That's next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Bik Nazar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Martin Pospisil behind his own goal for the Flames. Plays up the left wing for Connor Zeri. Zeri to the Vancouver line. Pospisil driving the net. Zeri, high slot, makes a move to the back end of the forehand. He scores! A beautiful goal by Connor Zeri. And the Flames get the win in overtime. They trailed 4-1 against the Canucks after the first. They battled back to take a 5-4 third period lead. JT Miller tied it late, but it's Connor Zeri who plays the hero. And Calgary gets 2 points on the road in Vancouver on the opening night of the season.
The former Kamloops Blazer goes outside, inside, and it looks like he's trying to hit Pospisil with the middle drive, but instead of passing it, hangs onto the puck. And Filip Hronek looks like he was anticipating the pass, gives Zeri the inside, and he ends up finishing, beating Artur Shelov in a 6-5 victory for the Calgary Flames.
Canucks had a 4-1 lead after the first period, end up losing 6-5 in overtime. Needed some JT Miller heroics late in the third period to tie it up, to send it to overtime. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free 1-888-275-0650. We are going to get the thoughts of the Canucks head coach as soon as that becomes available. And we are going to get to your reaction coming up in a moment as well. I mean, it started off so promising. Daniel Sprong scoring the first goal of the game, the second unit power play coming through, and then Brock Besser scored on the man advantage, the first unit also coming through, and then Connor Garland made it 3-0, and according to Sportsnet stats, it was the fastest the Canucks have ever scored three goals in a season opening game in 12 minutes and 16 seconds, and that's about as good as it got for the Canucks. Anthony Mantha scored a goal shorthanded before Brock Besser made it 4-1, just as a power play was expiring. And we saw a lot of great things on those goals. I mean, the Sprong one is pretty simple. It's a shot that goes through. The Brock Besser one, a nice passing play between Pedersen and Jake DeBrusk, and DeBrusk with a low to high play, which you saw the Canucks try to do a lot, 5-on-5 and on the power play. And then the Connor Garland goal, maybe the highlight goal of the night, considering Connor Garland eating a massive hit from Mackenzie Weegar in his own zone, helping the puck get out. And then what does he do? He picks himself up. He trails the play, gets into the zone, and crashes the net to score a goal. I mean, that was a lot of courage from Connor Garland on display.
Yeah, he got absolutely crunched in his own end, and eventually scores a goal in the other one with the helmet coming off for the goalie as well, which I'll detail this again in the rule book. When a goalkeeper has lost his helmet and or face mask and his team has control of the puck, play should be stopped immediately. When the opposing team has control of the puck, play should only be stopped if there is no immediate and impending scoring opportunity. So there was a rebound and a wide open net for Connor Garland. The ref allows it and gets that goal. So for all the text messages that we got about it, wondering why that goal was allowed, there you go. It's in the rule book.
Yeah, and then Flames scored 3 unanswered in the third. Pospisil, well, 4 unanswered if you consider the one in the second period. Rasmus Anderson, then Pospisil, Mackenzie Weegar, Jonathan Huberdeau to take a 5-4 lead before JT Miller tied it. And JT Miller, a goal and an assist and also a fight. A Gordie Howe hat-trick from JT Miller tonight, but obviously in vain as the Canucks lose in overtime.
It's an overwhelmingly high-event game from JT in both directions, because you think about the Mantha goal.
The Mantha goal, he gives the puck away.
That's his pass.
But also on the game-winning goal.
The
game-tying goal, because Quinn Hughes kind of saves his bacon.
Bails him out in a big way. It's his pass on the entry that creates the opportunity the other way for the Flames, and it's a shot from distance that Quinn blocks, and it's an amazing play by Quinn Hughes to just block that and fire it up to JT, who I imagine takes all his frustrations out on the puck and just destroys it past Vladar and gets the Canucks back on level terms. So he's very lucky in that moment to turn the tide, to get it in favor, get it back, and so the Canucks earn a point. But, he had 2 giveaways in this game leading to opportunities, and one of them the Flames were able to convert on.
Yeah, it's kind of encapsulated the night for the Canucks. A lot of great things, but also some mistakes that ended up being critical in the end. And Quinn Hughes had 2 helpers on the evening, as we mentioned. Brock Besser with 2 goals. So 3 multi-point players tonight: Besser, JT Miller, and Quinn Hughes. All right, we'll get to some phone calls coming up in just a moment, but I know the text inbox is popping off, Bick, now that we've kind of broken through or talked about some of the things that happened in the game tonight. I understand the frustration. It's always tough to watch your team lose, especially when they cough up a lead the way they did. I am seeing some overreaction, I will say. It's game one of the season. People still need to calm down a little bit. A lot of passion running high after a loss in the first game of the campaign.
I would say some of it is misdirected, but some of it, look, there's a lot of Shelov takes coming in. And I understand. Now, look, this is a young player. How much leeway do you give it? But if you're looking for a culprit for tonight of why this happened, like, that's number one for me. They're simple plays that he should have been able to turn away. We're talking about one or two saves that he should have been able to do it. So we're not going to read them all because there's a ton coming in here. But Sadiq from Vegas, make a save. Shelov, not the best performance from the young guy. Good experience on opening night. Hopefully a clear learning lesson and anxious to get some stability from Lankinen on Friday. Again, they range in tone as well. Team needed Shelov to make a save. 4 out of 5 shots ain't ideal. That one's an unsigned text. This one, Shelov's not an NHL starter, backup at best. Spencer Martin vibes. Also, this is why you should play your regulars more in preseason. That one's from J-Dog.
Yeah, I mean, Shelov's had how many starts? 3 mm-hmm. in the preseason. The other veterans, I mean, hey, I guess you can make that point. But, hey, you also see a lot of injuries in the preseason, so it's kind of pick your poison. But also a lot of criticism about Elias Pettersson. Java from Kelowna talk about how Pettersson and Hironi need to be back skated tomorrow. I just think after one game, there is a lot of, you know, over finger pointing towards individual players. Like we talked about, Shelov's had some issues, of course, as we talked about, and you want to blame Pettersson, go ahead, especially based on the playoffs that he had, the salaries being brought up. I'm not sure this is the game that I'm pinning the blame on him. And I'm sure people are saying, here you guys go defending him again. But I don't want to spend, honestly, considering so many things happened in this game, to me the story isn't Pettersson tonight.
No,
but there are a lot of Pettersson texts coming in, a lot.
Just because they're coming in, we'll adhere to it. The issue tonight was preventing goals, correct?
Yes.
So the Mantha goal is one of the goals he's on the ice for. It's JT giving the puck away to a guy.
He's on
a breakaway.
Yeah.
So
there's nothing you can do
logically
there.
We can absolve him of that one. The Anderson goal is the only other one he's on the ice for, as far as goals against.
Yeah, and that one, I mean, he's the one that ends up being in the vicinity, but if you can see him pointing to Sprong, he's trying to also cover the far point, because if he doesn't go over, there's a backdoor play that opens up. So he has to shade over. That creates space for Anderson, but there's a missed assignment there.
There's a missed assignment between DeBrusk and Sprong on that play.
Yeah, whichever one of those guys it is.
Those are the two goals he was on the ice for against. And he's away from the play on both of them. We'll leave it at that. Now, in hindsight, we referenced a play in the second period that he passes up a shot where he can get it to Jake DeBrusk.
Yeah.
Where he chooses to try to pass it to Jake DeBrusk. In a 4-1 game, we sat there and I said, hey, you know what? Trying to pair up with your new line mate? Like, that, to me, was the most egregious mistake Pettersson made tonight. So for all the textures that come in, that's the one that stands out to me. But as far as, like, defensively, there was 2 plays that he was on the ice for, and he's away from the puck.
Oh, I know. And people talk about being soft. I mean, he got into the face a couple times, threw a hit, blocked the shot. I mean, again.
We'll leave it at that.
I know. And it's like people, I can't believe you guys waited so long to talk Pettersson. We have a long season ahead of us. And if we're going to pin this one on him, I mean, we're going to have a lot of things going on. All right, a lot more reaction on the text inbox, 650-650. This one here says, need Ian Clark back on the ice with the goalies. And this one here says, big deal, boys. They got their points, but they did cough up a lead and didn't play with structure. It was frantic and nervous hockey. And it is early in the season. You see a lot of weird score lines. You saw Edmonton getting rolled tonight. The Golden Knights beat the Avalanche 8-4. It's the first game of the season. Leafs lost to the Habs. So there's a lot of helter-skelter hockey early on. I wouldn't, you know, get too high or too low on what you see early. But clearly a lot of stuff the Canucks have to clean up, Bick.
Yeah, it's the D-zone, like, off the face-off losses, which we chatted about a lot in the preseason. And it's the Uyghur goal tonight. It is the Huberdeau goal tonight. And I think it was the Pospisil goal. It crept up, and you should be able to remedy yourself. to understand like where the threats are. And Calgary routinely, we chatted a bit about this with Randeep, they routinely brought 3-4 guys high above the circles, and it just looked like a mystery to the Canucks to how to sort it out of which guy is going to pick up who when they thread back into the slot. And it just allowed so much space for Calgary. They're either scared to push out or unaware of where the threats were out wide. And too often, like the Huberto goal, the multiple instances of two guys trying to attack one player. And it just opens up space, and suddenly this pass goes in front, and there's a 2-on-1 down low,
yeah.
And Huberto's able to turn it in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Huberto, he's had his troubles, but I thought tonight overall had a pretty strong game as the game went on and had some good moments. And give the Flames credit. I mean, they could have easily let this game get out of control, and they fought back after the first period and ended up winning it in overtime. And a great play by Connor Zeri to win the game to make it a 6-5 victory. All right, let's hit the phone boards for a couple calls here before we hit the break again. 604-280-0650. Let's go to Richmond where we have Sam on the line. Sam, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Oh, and here I was just going to start talking about Petey and calling him 11-6. Now you guys already covered it again.
how it goes sometimes. Hey, you can say whatever you want, man. Whatever's on your mind, Sam, you can share.
No, it's okay. You guys pretty much said anything what I was going to say. But just that change of subject from Petey, everyone noticed that Brock and JT had a really good game. The third pairing of defense was a little but yeah, so the only thing, the other thing is that Shelov has to play positionally better, especially on those long shots. It's reminding me of Dan Klutschy, but we're not getting that far yet. Other than that, you know, it's just one game, and hopefully they'll play better Friday night against Philadelphia. Thanks, guys.
Hey, you got it, Sam. Appreciate it. I mean, let's hope so. There's a big game coming up on Friday against the Flyers. Let's continue on the phone boards. Let's take one more here. Let's go to Richmond. No, sorry, let's go to Surrey, where we have Dalvir on the line. Dalvir, thanks for calling in. And what are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking a call. Just wanted to say, in between when I left the arena and when I got back into my car, I had already, like, kind of mentally moved on from the game. Like, you know, it's obviously tough to lose the first game of the season. But if you kind of think about it, like, this is very weird to say, but if you think about it as a 46th game of the season, it's just one of the games out of 82, a game where maybe they didn't play great for 40 minutes, and a game where they absolutely blew a lead. They still came away with a point. And in a season where I think the only end goal is to make the playoffs and try and make noise there, obviously we want to play well in the regular season, but in the game where maybe we didn't play that well, we still came away with a point, and I'm not overly panicked about that. It's game one of the season, so there's a lot of things that can be improved on. There's things I want to see better. I want to see Petey, frankly, just drive more in general, and I want to see Roenick not be so passive on that game-winning goal. But overall, I'm just not panicked by that, and I already moved on from this loss.
Hey, Dalvir, good call, man. Appreciate it. Some good perspective here.
Hey, that's someone that listened to the post-game shows last year during the playoffs. Our good friend Brett Fesseling doing the two-hour rule. It's like, hey, enjoy the highs.
Yeah.
Move on from the lows after 2 hours. But here's Dalvir doing the 10-minute rule.
I love it.
Walk to the car. It's like,
walked
on to
it
the
off.
Next one.
See, people say a good walk can cure pretty much anything. Holden and Poco says, hear me out, but I think it was a good tone to start the season considering what was made of our PDO last year. Nothing gets handed out. It's either reached or snatched. That's Holden and Poco. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll take more of your phone calls and more of your text messages on the other side, plus the Canucks head coach. He is next as the Canucks Central postgame show continues, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment after a 6-5 Canucks loss in overtime against the Flames. More next on Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650
and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Rink by pass batted down. Middle of the ice by Coleman to Backlund to center with a chance for the empty net. It was blocked by Hughes back defending. And he controls the puck for the Canucks. Hughes up the left wing. Here's Miller into the Calgary zone, top of the circle. He scores! JT Miller ties the game with 1:37 left in the third. He completes the Gordie Howe hat trick in his 800th career game. And it's 5-5.
Of a shot by JT Miller, 95 miles per hour as he's coming down the left-hand side.
But what a save by Quinn Hughes on Michael Backlund with the empty net. Hughes picks up the puck, does a little twirl, and sets up number 9 coming down the left-hand side. And he goes top corner to tie this one up.
Canucks lose 6-5. JT Miller tried his best late, but the Canucks lose in overtime against the Calgary Flames. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment at Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. And let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet at the podium.
Rick, we just talked to Brock, and he said that he thought your group got too comfortable after the first period. Is that what you thought, too?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was enough guys probably said it and owned it up to it. So there's really not much for me to rip on those guys. They know what happened tonight, and you know we got to move on.
Is there a particular area of the game that you felt fell off after the first?
Well, I mean, Calgary, they wanted it more, and they played faster than us, and that's what happens. It's just kind of snowballed, right? The management of the puck, you know, things like that. You know, a little bit too much. I think a couple players even said it. You know, a little too much summer hockey. A lot of battles they were winning. That's really what it comes down to. You know, and plus we gave up 6 goals. It's a lot of goals to give up.
All right, Rick, power play gets a good start tonight. First and second unit. Something you talked about wanting to address in the offseason, getting the second unit going. How good is that for their confidence just to start like that?
Yeah. No, it's we've worked on some of the stuff and some of the stuff that on the goals it worked. So we'll continue to work at it. Yep.
Rick, when you consider what the first 20 minutes look like and then the rest of it.
Sure.
Is it tough to react, especially when it's your first game of the year, when you have 20 minutes that are almost exactly the way you would have drawn it up and 40 that are almost the exact opposite?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to overact the first game. I mean, we were heavy in training camp of a lot of transitional and stuff, and I was a little worried about this because we got away from our identity. I didn't think we won. The play without the puck was not good. I mean, that's a year and a half ago hockey, so it's only one game. Our identity, we got to be careful here because we are a good team without the puck, and I thought we didn't protect the guts of the ice. Guys were swinging. Things like that does not win. So, but like I said, it's the first game, and I got to take a little bit of the blame because I was really heavy this year in training camp of the transitional and that. And we did D-zone drills, but not as much as we did last year. Now, like I said, it's one game, so I'm not going to – players know. They got to be in certain spots. They weren't – if it's a trend for 4 or 5 games, I'd be worried, but it's one game. And, we'll sharpen up tomorrow.
Rick, on the penalty kill, your team did pretty well at managing these shots. What did you think of kind of how your team was able to react to Calgary's power play on the kill?
Yeah, no, I thought the special teams really got us a point, if you think of it. Like, if we didn't have power plays or penalty kills, 5-on-5, they beat us. So the whole specialty teams was good. So that's a positive for us tonight.
Well, the play of Artie, I know that there's been talk about shots from distance and seemed to struggle again in that area tonight.
Yeah, I got to look at some of the goals. We'll talk to Marco. Yeah, that's something that you just continue to work on. You know, we'll work on that sort of stuff. I got to look at the goals if, he saw it. I can't right now know that. Yeah,
I know that Forbert and Desharnais were on the ice, I think, for 3 goals, and you split them up at times in the third. What's your thoughts on that pairing and just their ability to keep up at times?
Yeah, I think that in general, I think we were getting stripped a little bit, our D. We weren't moving the puck quick enough. Calgary, when they were behind a little heavy forecheck, sometimes you just got to move the puck and get it out and then chase a puck down, and I think we were holding it too long, got stripped. So, like I said, we'll work on that sort of stuff.
Rick, the lack of intensity the last 40 minutes, are you surprised by that, considering the fact that opening night usually you have too much juice, not enough?
Well, I think, obviously with this team, you're a little surprised, but it's going to happen. I think we just got too comfortable. We had 3 power play goals. I think every thought it was going to be a lopsided win. And Calgary didn't give up, put their work boots on, and that's when you got to do the same. So am I surprised? No, I mean, they worked hard. We just didn't match their effort. like I said, it's one game, and it's a good, you know, a learning lesson that, you know, this is NHL hockey. You got to be ready. Anybody can beat you at any time if you're not ready. And if you, you know, you just got to respect the game a little bit. And but like I said, I mean, hey, good for us to tie it up there at the, with a minute. That was a big, I'm trying to look at the positives. It's like I said, it's the first game.
Seemed to be a couple of their goals where a player is stepping in from the point into the middle and your wingers are losing them on that that switch sometimes when players are coming up high. What were you seeing in those instances where players were losing their check off the point?
Well, yeah, they did the switch, and what we're doing is we're going like this. You got to come underneath. If we go underneath, there's no goal on that one. I don't want to name the guy, but if he just comes underneath, there's no goal. You know, there's a couple other coverage things. Or another place, two guys go to the puck, it gets in front of the net, they score. If the guy just stays where he's supposed to, like, it's little things like that. We usually don't make those mistakes. And we're probably going to have to start, you know, we'll work on the other stuff, but we're going to definitely do some more D-zone cover stuff, you know, until I'm comfortable with that sort of stuff. And you're right, the wingers got to get, we have to get out to their points a little harder, too, and block. Instead of, like, I think a couple of goals, our weak side winger was playing too wide. He should be in the middle. And that's another thing that probably wouldn't have scored on the goal if we had the guy we were supposed to be. So it's just the guys are off, like, 5 feet here and there. And like I said, we talked about that summer hockey. We got to get out of that summer hockey.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And, you know, the coach kind of talked about the things that we were breaking down earlier in the pregame show, postgame show. Specifically, the Pospisil goal and the Rasmus Anderson goal. I think that's really what he's talking about there in terms of guys losing their position and talks about the one guy coming from underneath. I think that would be on the Pospisil goal. But it was one of the big problems they had on some of those goals was players being out of position. It seemed like they weren't trusting each other, getting too wide, or cheating off a bit too much. But that was a problem that we did not see at all or very little last season, and it was on full display in the second and third period, and that's one of the things that he was really harping on there.
Yeah, and took a little bit of responsibility for it as well, that some of the D-zone stuff was not emphasized as much during training camp, and the transitional stuff, which, you know, in the first period looked fantastic. They were so energetic and so direct with it, and you thought, well, all right, this is how it's supposed to look, and it's leading to scoring chances, leading to drawn penalties, leading to power play goals, and then you see the identity of what they're supposed to be. And you got to remember this, like, every season is a new season.
Yeah.
You can't just say, okay, that was our identity last year, and you can just carry it over into this year. And all that stuff is already embedded in us. It has to be reinforced, it has to be redeveloped, and it has to be come back to staples. I'll steal a phrase. It's who they're meant to be, and they're meant to evolve from that and use that to be that transition team. We didn't see elements of that through these 60 minutes.
No, we certainly didn't, at least not consistently. And he mentioned a good learning lesson. And one thing we talked about on the pregame show with Reach was the Flames obviously are not a strong team, but they're also a team that they have a low ceiling. Their floor, I wouldn't say, is high, but they're not going to be, as long as they're healthy, like a sub-70-point team.
No.
And they might even be close to 80 points, which means a 500 team can win on any given night. And if you don't bring your best, or if you take them lightly, they can beat you. And that's what he talked about. He said, you have to be ready. Anyone can beat you. You have to respect the game a little bit. And he kind of stopped himself. It was almost like he was trying to talk himself down, saying it's only game one. It's one of many. And I would be concerned if this becomes a trend four or five games in, but it's only one. But he seemed pretty frustrated with what he saw tonight. But that's the other lesson here, too. Like, you got 4-1. As good as you might be, you take it easy. There are enough NHL players on the other side that are going to beat you, and that's what happened tonight.
Yeah, it's a veteran group. I know we're chatting about, like, they are rebuilding, clearly, and they have designs of being a bit more of a competitive team when their arena is unveiled. but it's not as if they've already torn everything down. A lot of pieces have gone out, but Huberto's 31, Kadri's 34, they have Kuzmenko who's 28, Blake Holman is 32, Michael Backlund, their captain's 35. It's a veteran group. Sharon Govich is, I know he's out, but he's 26, but Ryan Lomberg they bring in, who's 29. It's a veteran group.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ceiling might not be there, but they know how to go about a game. It's not like a Chicago where the eyes are wide open and they're just trying to take everything in stride.
Well, and you know what? Like, considering how out of sorts they were in the first, and they were really on tilt after JT Miller collided, hit Kevin Rooney, and he went head first into the boards and had to leave the ice. And it was a really scary situation. Thankfully, he waved the stretcher off and was able to skate off the ice with the help of a few teammates and training staff. But after that, they were chasing JT around. Anthony Mantha was after him. Other players were after him. They seemed really distracted. But even after that, after the first period, they kind of settled down. JT ended up fighting Mantha. And after that, they didn't really chase him. Like, they, to give them credit, like, the Flames, despite being down 4-1, despite having a lot of things to be frustrated about, they did turn the game around on their terms without letting it get out of control. And that's a testament to them.
That's the value of veterans, right? Of just knowing, hey, play the next play. And it took a while, but they worked their way back into the game, and then it happened really fast with four goals really fast.
Yeah, it happened really, really quickly. All right, we are going to take more of your phone calls, and we'll get more post-game reaction from players as well on the other side. You want to grab a phone line, you can do so, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650, and hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650, as the Canuck Central post-game show continues, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. More next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
No, I mean, obviously, with this team...
Huberto's after it left board. Pushed to the wall by Bluger, who's able to clear it to the line but not out. Jake Bean holds in. Right wing for Braden Fahal. Threw it into the crease. They score! Jammed home in the blue paint by Jonathan Huberto. And the Flames have the lead for the first time tonight. It's 5-4 Calgary with 9:19 left in the third.
And this was a team that was down 4-1, but now they have the lead.
No, I mean, obviously, with this team, you're a little surprised, but it's going to happen. I think we just got too comfortable. We had three power play goals. You know, I think every thought it was going to, you know, be a lopsided win. And Calgary didn't give up, put their work boots on, and that's when you got to do the same. So, am I surprised? No, I mean, you know, they worked hard. We just didn't match their effort.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet wanted more out of his team tonight, losing 6-5 in overtime against the Calgary Flames. Had a 4-1 lead. Couldn't take it home in the season opening game here at Rogers Arena. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar, and you are listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Before we go to the phone boards, Bick, let's get a couple text messages in as well. A lot popping on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text inbox.
650-650, Mason and Langley, as much as I love Shelovs, I feel he needs to be better, or maybe you're just too used to Demko bailing us out. Time for Lankinen is another unsigned text, 650-650. Bungalow Jim, I can't believe how quickly I've lost all faith in Shelovs. Look, there's a lot of Shelovs texts here.
Yeah.
Robbie and Burnaby, hopefully this game becomes a distant memory rather than a sign of things to come. And this one, even the first period, was mostly driven by power play and penalties that were mostly reckless penalties by Calgary due to payback for Rooney, not earned due to hard work by the Canucks.
Yeah, so a lot of that stuff on the text inbox. Mike and Tuason, coasting should have been fine. 4 goals and 5 shots was a fluke, Mike and Tuason says. Seeing like a lot of them just kind of went in, usually not as much puck luck is what he's suggesting.
Yeah.
Vic is not convinced.
I just, look, the possible soul goal is just going to be stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Of how poorly that is tracked.
Yeah.
And then the Uyghur goal.
The Uyghur goal is not great.
It's off a face-off. It's
not great. I mean, and that's, honestly, things like that to me are very, I didn't see anything tonight that's not correctable. You know, like, I didn't see anything tonight that I don't think they can clean up and do a lot better. Like, effort stuff, being focused and being in the right spot. Goaltending, I think it depends on your level of confidence in Shilovs or not. That's from an individual standpoint.
Especially because the standard of goaltending here, which is feels bizarre to say.
But he's also set a higher standard than what you've seen tonight.
Of course. But the standard of goaltending here, going 20 years almost, has been really high.
What's funny, I mean, nobody would have said, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years
not
ago.
Not at all.
That we'd be spoiled by great goaltending for two decades.
You go through the list of names, right? Luongo, Schneider, Miller, Demko, Holtby, Markstrom. Like, it's been really strong. Really strong. And so, over two decades here, and I know the Holtby stretch wasn't fantastic, but Brayden Holtby's had a fantastic career, obviously. Mm-hmm. But when you see that repeatedly, that's why, like, the stretches that people text in about, like a Spencer Martin or something like that, it's like, we're not used to this here.
Yeah.
All of a sudden. And tonight, given the standard of goaltending that this market has seen for nearly two decades, this was substandard in goal.
Yeah. I think he can be better. I think he will be better.
Yes.
But it is going to be a real battle with Kevin Lankinen, who's a very capable goaltender with far more NHL experience than Artur Shilovs as well. And if you thought that, you know, it was going to be Shilovs' job, well, he's going to have a lot of competition here. So I would imagine we see Lankinen on Friday, and then we'll go from there in terms of which goalie gets what games and how both these guys fare until hopefully we see Thatcher Demko back, hopefully early this season, but we'll find out exactly as the next couple weeks go on here. And the thing about tonight's game, which honestly, I know, you know, some may roll their eyes because, Bick, you and I have been known as being two of the bigger JT Miller boosters here on these airwaves going back a couple years, even when there was a lot of JT Miller criticism. But tonight was another indication of how important he is to this team. But on the evening where he played his 800th NHL game, and a night where he had a goal, had an assist, had a fight, tied the game late, for us to not make JT the big story tonight with the fans just screaming at the top of their lungs, chanting JT Miller. I mean, he is by far the most popular player right now at Rogers Arena. By far, bar none. There may be more Quinn Hughes fans that are Canucks fans or Pedersen fans even. Well, although, I mean, recently, I mean, that may have waned with the reaction we're seeing. But in terms of how the crowd reacts, they don't react bigger and louder to any player other than JT Miller. And it was an incredible night for him, incredible atmosphere at the arena. And it's just too bad that it's 11:06, the last segment of the postgame show, and now we're talking about it because it ended up being such a backstory in what was a poor ending for the Canucks tonight.
Just to show how popular it's become, they're willing to chant his name after a hit where a guy is laying on the
ice. I know, and that was
a lot of people have texted in saying how classless
cringe
that was.
I mean, honestly, I think fans just got caught up in the moment. Like, it happens, but yeah, it was a little tough.
It was a tough moment, and then he has the fight, and then that's the moment you go back and start chanting.
Yeah, it was great.
He scores the game-tying goal. That's the moment you go back and start chanting. But again, even in that moment, like that is his rating right now amongst the fans, that here's this huge play early in the season, first game of the season, and fans are just so eager to back the player and start chanting his name. The story of this game cannot be told without JT Miller. He was a constant thread through everything. Positively or negatively, he was involved in everything.
Yeah, he really was. He really was. And I think when you look at what he's going to mean to this team this year as well. And we saw the goal, of course, but that pass he made to Brock Besser on his goal, just an incredible slick pass. And there's so many other plays he made throughout the night where you saw, obviously, the talent. Maybe a slight bit of rust, only played one game. He had a couple of giveaways. We talked about the giveaway to Mantho, of course, and getting bailed out by Quinn Hughes on the empty net when he gave the puck away and ended up scoring on the sequence when the puck came back to him. Not great overall in terms of some moments, but JT Miller doing JT Miller things and the crowd reacts in an incredible way to him. The other thing that we didn't get to a ton, but we were kind of keeping an eye on throughout the game, Bick, was how aggressive the Canucks were and how much speed they had in the first period, especially down the wings and creating chances in transition. They had about, I think it was four almost clean partial breaks in the first period. Blueger had two, Garland had one, and Sprong had one too. Yeah. So they have four of those in the first period, and they were really putting a lot of pressure on the Calgary Flames. They didn't quite do it as well as the game went on. The question we also had was, are they going to get away from their identity a bit too much, trying to chase being something different,
yeah,
something coach is a bit worried about? And he did say he took some of the blame for maybe emphasizing the rush creation throughout preseason and training camp. They did it so well in the first, but we did see how they got too separated in the second and third period.
And it's always the constant concern, right? How do you take what happened last year, the successes, and build upon it? And you can't just be static. You do have to find a new wrinkle every season. And I know Yannick has talked about this on your show, and he's talked about it on my show. There was a season where they changed systems and how different everything looked. Look at Edmonton last year. They have success 2 years ago, and in goes Jay Woodcroft. You think, all right, let's go back to the lab. Let's evolve. And it goes like a complete mess.
Yeah, you can't go too far, right?
And he ends up losing his gig because of it, and in comes Chris Knobloch.
Yeah.
And that sort of tinkering, how does it translate? And it was nice to see Rick Tocchet recognize that. Hey, that's on me. Not that we have to fix everything right away, but if this goes on 4 or 5 games, yeah, we're going to have to adapt. So being able to assess the problem and realize what the problem is and being aware of it, we'll see how long this trend continues because, yeah, you can't play that open all the time. And if their identity is meant to be structure, tonight was not a night of structure.
No, it really wasn't, right? But we'll see. I think all this stuff's going to change. But honestly, like, I think there's a lot of overreaction in the text inbox. Jordan in the Ridge
says, a one-game sample size.
I know, one game. And Jordan in the Ridge, bring Bo back. Need a Canadian captain. Where's the 11-6 man? I mean, guys.
Well, he's not the captain.
He's not. But also, like, it's one game in. I think Quinn used it pretty well last year. Got to chill out. Everyone's got to chill out. All right, enough from the text inbox for the moment. Let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Poco, where we have Adam on the line. Adam, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, boys. Yeah, no, like, we're just driving home from the game now, and, like, for the most part, man, so many good performances tonight. Spronger looking unreal. Like, every chance he was on, every time he was on the ice, he was creating chances, but, like, Pettersson, man, like I don't know, like, do we need to give him some of, like, Quinn Hughes' mindfulness books? Let him have access to the library? Like, he can't get out of his own head if you gave him a key and a map, man. Like, it's tough to watch.
What was it tonight? You say it was tough to watch, but what was it tonight that you didn't see or that was so tough for you to watch this evening?
Just the confidence with the puck, firstly, man. It's like the PD of, like, a couple years ago where it's like every time he touched the puck, it's like, he did it with purpose. I don't know. Anytime we saw him, it just seems like he's anticipating his own mistakes. And it's like you feel it watching him, and everyone in the crowd feels it. There's this kind of like, oh, here's Petey messing up again. You know, it's this energy that is, and I think it's carried over from the playoffs. And it's tough, man. He's such a great player, and I'm curious what you guys think. What's going on with him, and if you think it's something that's going to kind of persist going into the season here.
Hey, Adam, thanks for the phone call. I'm glad you guys had fun at the game, but obviously not the finish that everybody wanted to see here. The thing I would say, though, about that,
there was honestly one moment where, just to give credence to the call, right, and we've highlighted a couple of moments, but there was one moment along the left boards, maybe it was in the third period, correct me if I'm wrong, where he did mishandle a drop pass and just kind of flailed at the puck. And
sure,
like,
yes.
There was an audible groan from the crowd. So
yeah,
it
I know which one they're talking about.
Now,
but it was also on, it was after.
Confident handling that puck on the pass to DeBrusk that led to the Besser goal?
And also that reaction was coming after Calgary scored a couple. The Canucks were kind of meandering.
Yeah.
And the crowd was getting frustrated with what they saw. But yes, I mean, you're not wrong. But the thing, in all fair, listen, I think what people want to see is Pettersson getting them out of their seats. Okay, fair. I honestly didn't see a bad player tonight. So he got the one assist. He set up Sprong for a clear chance. He set up DeBrusk for a clear chance. Neither guy finished it. He he tried to set up DeBrusk for a pass where he should have shot it, but that puck goes through. It's a goal. I mean, right there, we're talking about maybe he has one more point, maybe another one, maybe you have 2 points, maybe you have 3 points. And I think that was on the table there for him. And in terms of defensively, on the PK, nobody's brought this up, but he probably made one of the best defensive plays any player made on the PK tonight. That's taking away a backdoor pass to Jonathan Huberdeau. It was a tap-in, and he breaks the play up. He just comes in and stops the play. In terms of him throwing the body, had a hit on the night, had a block shot. I saw him stand some guys up. I didn't see a guy that was losing his position consistently. I don't know. People want more? That's fair. Getting paid a lot of money? That's fair. You want more? You can ask for more. I don't know if this is the game, though, I'm pointing to and saying, oh, he was so horrible, because he could have filled the stat sheet. He took away a goal that was a sure goal. He didn't make any obvious mistakes defensively. This is not the game that I'm losing my mind over.
I'm not transitioning the Inkblot name tag from Tyler Myers to Elias Pettersson, but this did feel like the statement could be said, I think, that this was an Elias Pettersson game. Now, in the eye of the beholder, that means something to some one person, and means a completely different thing to another person. Where, to the caller's point, if you wanted to groan about a play, there may have been an opportunity to do it. I think it's being harsh, but again, I have a different perception of what an Elias Pettersson game looks like.
Yeah, and I mean, and people are saying, you know, he should have shot it when it was 4-1. I just mentioned that. Probably should have shot it, but it's not like he wasn't making a high-danger play. That play connects. It's a sure goal. And what are we talking about if the play connects? What a beautiful passing play. What an audacious pass. And, you know, it's so such a fine line sometimes when we laud the players for making great moves, but also when they do too much. It's like, oh, why don't you just do the simple play? It is what it is. It's the first game of the season. You guys can have your takes. All good. 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Do you want to take another Pettersson phone call?
Sure. We'll take any phone call.
Let's go to Nanaimo, where we have Paul on the line. And Paul, you have a thought about Pettersson as well.
Yeah, that's right. I was surprised from the last call that was about him. But no, I really do think the Canucks are going to be a very, very good team this year. I love the management, and I believe they will make adjustments as the season goes along to give, the coaching staff the players that they need. My concern is number 40. I really can't understand how you guys are so supportive of him. But... you know, here's a guy that is making, what, approximately $4 million more than Miller and Hughes. He's one of the highest paid players in the NHL. And I'm just saying, all I could say is, unless they make a trade and get the best they can for him, they will never... the Vancouver Canucks will never win a Stanley Cup with him as their highest paid player. And I will hang up and listen to what you guys have to say.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. That's Paul in Nanaimo, clearly doesn't believe in Elias Pettersson. And that's fine. The one thing I will say, though, is for the amount of people that are like, why aren't you guys criticizing Pettersson? What happened to, like, the media running players out of town? Right? Like, I don't want to hear from any of you texting in ripping Pettersson. And you want us to rip Pettersson? Never, you're never allowed to blame the media ever again for or accusing them of trying to run players out of town. Now we're getting people telling us, why aren't you criticizing these players more? Why aren't you crapping on players more? It's game one of the season. I mean, Paul, with all due respect, God love you. Give your head a shake. It's game one of the season. And you don't believe in the player, that's fine. But we're firing these takes off in game one? I expected better. I'm disappointed. I really am disappointed. I thought after what we saw last year, and I know, like, hey, maybe not the best game, but this is where we're going after one game? Really, guys?
Level-headed.
Come
on. Is not a thing on game one of the season.
And, like, you can criticize it. That's fine. You can criticize the player, but this whole, like, you know, you're never going to win with them, get rid of them, like, or we need a Canadian captain. It's game one, guys. Game one.
Let's just watch your hot head. Oh, man. Yeah, look, we need the stamina for 81 more of these.
Oh, I should see the text coming in now.
Again, I've echoed this many times. We read the ones that are safe to read for air.
Yes.
And if you think it's too hot, just imagine the ones that were unable to read on air.
Yeah. Well, 100%. And somebody texting, you guys haven't talked about Shilovs at all? Yes, we have. You know what? I think we've said enough, and you guys have said enough for the evening.
Don't know so what you've been listening to if you don't think we've mentioned Shilovs tonight.
But you know what? It's time to bring in the man we call the closer.
Let's go.
He is the best in the business. It's Ian McIntyre here on the postgame show.
I have missed that music.
I have not listened to it all summer.
By the way, you can still call me the triple threat. Just because I'm not on television, just like Mick isn't. Doesn't mean that I'm not actually still on television sometimes.
Yeah,
just not on the broadcast.
All right, you know what? I'll keep it clean.
All right.
The triple threat is back in action. Ian, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't want to get into it too much, but what you were walked into was a lot of frustration and a lot of people pointing at Pettersson. And I get it. Maybe, you know, they can point at Pettersson, but they're talking about how they're never going to win with this guy here. Trade the guy. He's horrible. He's this, he's that. And I'm like, it's game one. And I get it. Not a great playoff. But come on. Like, give your head a shake. It's one game. If we're going that far. And honestly, if you want to use the last two or three months or like, oh, bad playoffs. Honestly, all you're doing is justifying bad behavior. Just relax. Be a little rational. We can talk about this later. But that's where I was going with the Pettersson stuff. But where do you feel this game went wrong tonight?
You know, I had a sneaky suspicion this morning when Rick Tocchet pleaded for calm ahead of time, saying that in season openers, sometimes there's so much emotion and people react too much one way or another, whether you win or lose and how you win or lose. I had a feeling, as sensible as that message sounded, that it may not take in this market, depending on the events that transpire. And certainly tonight was every bit as stunning, but not in a good way, as the season opener last year against Edmonton. I don't know what to make of it because it's only game one. I'm not really prepared to make a sweeping judgment at this point. I do know, as they do, that was fairly atrocious management of a three-goal lead twice, but especially the four. I mean, they're up 4-1 at home, 23 minutes to go, and they give up four straight goals in less than 14 minutes. On all four goals, you can look at basic one-on-one positioning. You can look at puck management. You can look at zone coverage, maybe not on all four, but on every goal there's
certainly
issue.
At least three.
And yes, you can look at, did the goalie find a way to give you a save? But I don't think this was Artur Shilov's fault this game. Certainly, he was no worse than Dan Vladar at the other end for Calgary. So I don't think the goaltending was the issue. And
I don't know about that. He's not even looking at Pospisil. Like, he goes to track Anderson. And it's like, the puck's at the top.
Yeah.
What are you looking at?
Yeah, but you don't think Dan Vladar would the goal?
Yeah, Vladar wasn't great either. I mean, fair enough. But, yeah.
I mean, the goal, it wasn't the goaltending tonight, Bick. But he has to be, ultimately, he's going to have to, if he wants to play, he's going to have to be better than he was tonight. But that's not the reason they lost 6-5.
So what was the reason?
Well, I'm trying to explain to you. Okay. They were incompetent in playing with the lead as a team.
Yeah, and
that's it. I mean, you can't play that way in the National Hockey League, even against a team like the Flames, who we know are stuck between a rebuild and a hard place. Right? They're the epitome of the mushy middle. Mm-hmm. Until they prove us wrong, maybe they're going to have a 109-point season. Who knows? I don't see it, but You can't play against anybody being as sloppy as this team was. Mm. You can't close out games that way.
No, and there were so many positions. We broke this down quite a bit throughout the game. There were a lot of goals, there were a lot of mistakes and missed assignments. And one thing that we also saw was the forward Desharnais pair have some issues in their own end. And a lot of it is with the forwards, too, because they were out of place. It's all connected, especially with how the Canucks like to defend as a five-man unit in their own zone or and all over the ice, for that matter. But I thought there were a lot of things that seemed spaced and things that I would imagine will get better. So I wouldn't look at this game and say, oh, I'm seeing so many problems or red flags that I'm overly concerned about. These look like correctable mistakes, and like the coach mentioned, a lot of these mistakes weren't happening last year.
Yeah, it's a little bit of they need a little remedial work. Mm-hmm. That's it. And mind you, they had 8 players in their lineup tonight, if you include the backup goalie, who are new to the team. So you don't, you know, when you only have 12 who played this way last year, maybe there is more than just some basic remedial work to go on, but they did not look like that Canuck team. I didn't hear talk at postgame, so you guys have the advantage on me, but I believe he talked about identity.
Yeah.
And I would say that's a good topic for us all to follow up on between now and the Philadelphia game, because the identity that the Canucks showed tonight, being that vulnerable and that open and that poor with the lead, is not what we saw very often last year. Like, I mean, you can remember or almost remember the games that happened, and I'm thinking of the 10-7 debacle in Minnesota, for one, because it was so rare, right? It just didn't the Canucks closed teams out. 41-1-4, I think?
Yeah.
Something like that. I hope I got the number right in my story. But, I mean, something...
I think they had like one, or maybe two. It was one regulation.
It was only, I know the one is correct. They only lost once in regulation last year when leading after 2 periods, and they had a 2-goal lead after 2 periods and a 3-goal lead late in the second. So, as Quinn Hughes did say, because I was there for that, I mean, this is not characteristic of this team. This isn't what they're about. I think they all know that, and we'll see if they can have more of that identity that allowed them to be a 109-point team next game against Philadelphia.
It was 42-1-4 when leading after 2.
Okay,
so there you go.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah,
I mean most teams have fairly dominant point percentage, especially good teams, if you lead into the third. But the so this just doesn't happen as much as especially last season we saw so many comebacks and there were so many games where someone was behind by 2 or 3 and then they were up. And but generally if you get it to the final 20 minutes in this league with a lead and you're a solid team, what happens tonight should not happen and certainly doesn't happen very often.
JT, central figure through everything, whether it's a big hit, a fight, a goal, a giveaway that leads to a goal, a game-tying goal, everywhere tonight.
Well, I was writing angry, and it wasn't really because of JT, but in the second intermission, I had about 400 words that were just sensational about JT Miller's night and his evolution. And
do you want to share them with us?
No,
because
I'm gonna I saved them. They'll appear some other time. You just won't know it. But center of attention, nothing wrong with the hit. I hope Rooney's okay. It was obviously the landing. It wasn't the hit itself. It was how he landed and hitting the back of his head. But you know, JT is, he's got these, and I've used it before, it's like superhero powers when it comes to hockey. And when he's on his game, there's very few players in this league like him. And when he's off his game, you know, all that good gets channeled towards the dark side. And JT had some poor moments tonight as well. I mean, people love him, and you know, he was the center of attention in his 800th game. But he gave the puck away on the shorthanded goal. I believe it was him who gave the puck away.
It was
6-5, 6-on-5, when Backlund should have iced the game, and Quinn Hughes made a bigger save than Shelov's was able to come up with in the third. So you know, he was like the team. You know, some great moments early on, and some really sloppy, uncharacteristic moments later. But he's such a captivating figure now in this market, and he's certainly a guy that 2 or 3 years ago, when I think half the market wanted him either traded or not re-signed, and people were storming Canuck offices with pitchforks when they announced that contract.
I remember in games where he got booed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where they were booing him
featured on Hockey Night.
Yeah.
Yes. When it's like, oh, look at this back check that's not happening.
And
here.
now he's beloved.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe that says something about how this market is as well. And again, getting back to the first point about what Tocchet was talking about this morning about, you know, trying to be measured and tempering your emotions. Yeah. But everyone is so connected, or most people are so connected to the team, that those emotions run so high and low. But when JT Miller was getting booed, he was doing lots of good things too.
Yeah.
Now he's just getting universally cheered like few players that I recall, and yet he's still making some mistakes, and he would be the first to admit that tonight. So like everyone else, he's got to be sharper and cleaner with the puck and manage the game better than they did tonight. They just did not manage the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Came up with a big goal too, and moments like that always will win over fans too. But Ian, that brings us to the end of the show. Make sure to read Ian's latest on sportsnet.ca that, if it's not up now, will be up very shortly, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was a late game tonight,
yeah,
wasn't it? There weren't many that ended after 10 p.m. Last year. But I hustled over here. I'm sorry you only got 10 minutes of me. You're probably relieved, Bic, that I wasn't here longer. But
I wish it was 25 minutes. We could have chatted more about Chilos.
I will say, like, I felt really good with the run over. My knee is healing well. I had had surgery 2 years ago, so I was laboring last season. I feel like I'm back to 100%.
You think your game on the pitch is going to be stronger this year?
No, it's not.
Okay. At least you're healthier. That's a good thing.
But I feel better. It felt like I was almost going to keep going around the building. It was like getting to the post-game access where we have to circle the building. Yeah. But I'm feeling pretty good. Maybe I won't turn into the gondola. I'll just do another lap. Yeah. But
That corner around the alumni suite, just torqued out on the knee and just kept going.
Yeah. I just have to dodge the custodians at this time of night. But
No doubt.
Hopefully a quicker game on Friday and you'll be graced with more of my time.
Well, we would love to have more of your time, Ian. The triple threat like none other, and make sure to read his latest very soon on sportsnet.ca. Thanks for your time, Ian. And that brings us to the end of the show. Bic, back on the People Show tomorrow.
Yeah, more recap of this game, more reaction from people. You can call in at 3 o'clock, and Mike Lombardi will join us at 3:30.
Oh, nice. Mike Lombardi, that's a good get. All right, thanks to Lena here at the rink. Thanks to Eddie back at the station. And thank you all for listening, participating, being part of the post-game show. Always a lot of fun. Can't wait to be back at it again on Friday when the Canucks host the Philadelphia Flyers. You've been listening to the Canucks on the post-game show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.